Well, you're going to have to be a little patient with me tonight. I've never been good at public speaking, never have been. I'm just the same old Moses. I mean, that's right, believe it or not, Moses. That's me. I mean, you were expecting somebody big and powerful and a great figure. A leader with authority and self-confidence. Maybe you expected a legend walking the earth and standing now before you. There was a time when I kind of expected that too. But I'm just an old man with a tired tongue. And so you're going to have to be patient with me. You know, I am older than I look, and I don't really speak very well. I mean, I never have. You know, growing up in Pharaoh's house, the inability to speak was the worst of my troubles. I mean, but you know the story. I wasn't Egyptian royalty. I was born a Hebrew slave and tossed in a river and rescued from the basket, kind of my own personal Noah's Ark, if you will. But that was a long time ago. And I know I don't need to bore you with all the details. You know about the murder and the escape from Egypt. And you know about the parting of the Red Sea and the drowning of Pharaoh's army and chariots in the water. You've heard the story of the stone tablets and the golden calf. But tonight I want to tell you something about me, something before my funeral, before I'm finally laid to rest. You see, I've seen and I've done so much. I mean, you could get the idea that I am something of a hero. But looking back at the whole story from the top of this mountain, I simply feel inadequate. You know, I didn't want to go. I didn't want to go back to Egypt. I didn't want to be the leader of God's people, that group of stiff-necked people that I did eventually come to love. I certainly never set out to be a mouthpiece for the Almighty. Me, with my lack of speaking ability, you know, talk about the wrong person. I told him that too. I told the great I Am that I wasn't very good, that I wasn't a good choice, that I wasn't a good leader, that, I mean, who am I to bring the mighty words of God with my poor speaking? There I was at the burning bush, and I told him I wasn't up for the job, but he didn't listen to me. Oh, dear Lord, I said, please, please send somebody else. You know, it wasn't that I didn't want to go back. I really didn't want to go back. And it wasn't that I was afraid, though I really was afraid. Mostly, I just felt, well, not up to the job. I wasn't brave enough or smart enough or holy enough. I mean, after all, who was going to listen to me? Mostly, I felt, you know, that no one really would care. You know, but in the end, I know my own inadequacies really didn't matter much to God. God decided to use Moses, and so he did. But I wasn't alone. You know, God did give me my brother Aaron and my sister Miriam, and they helped share the burden of leadership. And God put his staff in my hand to work the miracles of his word. And And he sent me and all my inadequacies and all my inability to speak, all my murderous ways. He sent me out to do his bidding. You know, I didn't look like a hero. You know, leaving the sheep behind to call on Pharaoh's court. I mean, Pharaoh didn't believe me. The children of Israel didn't believe me. I didn't believe me. But the great I am is greater than the gods of Egypt. The great I am is greater than my inadequacy. The great I am will always accomplish his purpose, even when his people are weak and doubting, confused, rebellious, incompetent, afraid, like me. Well, I learned firsthand that God can use inadequacy and inadequate people to do his saving work. You know, the plagues took on the gods of Egypt one by one. I mean, those miracles came through God's holy word, through my poor stumbling voice. And the lamb's blood that covered our houses and the angel of death passed over just as God had promised. And the armies of Egypt were drowned in the water of the sea. And I saw it all happen. I mean, I was a part of it. But I was never in control because, you see, it wasn't about me. It's never about me if I only had not forgotten that truth. You see, at the burning bush, I was focused on me. That's why I asked God to send somebody else. And God was not pleased. I mean, I was focusing on my weaknesses, not on his promises. But the longer I led this beautiful and stubborn people, the more confidence I gained. I became their leader. I spoke for God. I even saw their heavenliness, the glory of the I am, and on my face was shown the reflection. I learned the dependence of God in my weakness, but I forgot the dependence of God in my strength. And so it was just after Miriam died. We'd been wandering around in the wilderness for years and years and years, and people still grumbled. They still lacked trust. They blamed me for all of their hard and fearful hearts. And so the Lord told me to speak to a rock in order that the people and their cattle could drink and live. Well, at this point, I no longer had Miriam, But I didn't need her help. I mean, I'd been leading God's people and doing God's work. And so I told Aaron to assemble the people together. And I took that same staff that God had given me at the burning bush, that same staff that had worked all those miracles in Egypt. And I took my powerful staff in my powerful hand, and I put myself on the same level as God. And so I yelled, "You hard-hearted and stiff-necked people, your grumbling has offended and dishonored our God and mine. But we will bring water forth from this rock as we did before." And although God had just simply commanded me to speak to the rock with my weak, speaking, stumbling voice, I chose that powerful staff and I struck the rock twice to show my own power. People got their water. But I, who was saved through the water, was also condemned through the water. Because you see, I forgot the most important lesson for God's servant. It's not about me. And since I made Moses as important as God, I'm stuck on this mountain while Joshua prepares the people for their final trip home. You know, from here, I can look out and I can see the promised land just over the horizon. But I won't be going in. We buried Aaron, my brother, in the wilderness. But God is going to bury me here on this crag, on this mountain. And I'm going to have to wait to the day of the resurrection before I experience the fulfillment of God's promise in His land. Now, being barred from the promised land might seem like a steep price to pay for just hitting a rock. Sometimes felt that way to me too, but my sin wasn't simple disobedience. You know, I made myself as important as God. I stopped depending on His word. I thought that I could just do it on my own. You know, He should have buried me just right then and there in front of that rock of testing. But, well, I'm glad He didn't, because I got another chance to learn. Whether I feel powerful or inadequate, it's still not about me. And so after we buried Aaron, I was on my own now, and the people became impatient again. And this time the Lord sent poisonous snakes, and they bit the people, and the bite burned, and people died. But then they turned to the Lord, and they confessed their sin. And so I prayed for them. I always prayed for them. And God gave me a new way for the people of Israel to live. This time I was not supposed to speak. I had no need of my staff, because you see, this wasn't about me at all. I was told to take some metal and to shape it into the form of a snake, and like the ones that were biting the people, and then put it up on a pole, a bronze snake on a pole. I mean, I have to admit that shaping a serpent seemed rather strange to me at the time. I mean, I saw the finger of God write the commandments on the stone. You shall not have any other gods, nor should you make any graven images. And that same God who told me to pulverize a golden model of a herd animal was now asking me to shape a bronze snake. I mean, a snake of all things. Can you believe that? I mean, we know all about the snake, don't we? It was the snake that got us kicked out of the land of promise in the first place. A snake was the one that brought the idolatry to us. But you see, a bronze snake on a pole wasn't to be worshipped. It wasn't a talisman, a good luck piece. Instead, the snake became the symbol of sin, our sin. And the bronze serpent was a sign of the punishment and the death that our sins deserved. And that twisted shape, lifted up before God, became sin for us. And our constant grumbling, our failure to trust, our stubborn rejection, our hard hearts, those got strung up there on that pole. And anyone who looked at that, the curse was lifted. And they received the promise of God and lived. And as I said, I can still see the promised land. It's a little far off. I can hear the people beginning their journey home. The Lord is going to come again soon, and He's going to plant my body here in the warm earth that I'm standing on. But while I wait for the Lord to come, that bronze serpent is comfort. It's a reminder that God is going to keep His promises, that he's going to keep leading his people without Moses, and that God will fulfill his promises in his way and in his time. And when the people sin, when they rebel, when they grumble and turn away, God himself will provide a way, a means of forgiveness, a sign of God's anger poured out and finally satisfied, lifted high on a pole. And when the people look at it, they will be saved.